You're listening to Sports Connections with David Smale, the show that brings you a fun and intimate look into connections throughout sports. Now here's your host, David Smale.
The National Christian College Athletic Association is an association of Christ-centered collegiate institutions whose mission it is to use athletic competition as an integral component of education, evangelism, and encouragement. Dan Wood joined the national office of the NCCAA in 2000 after serving on the board for years. He's a former student athlete, coach, and athletic director at various institutions. He started his collegiate athletic career as a golfer at North Carolina State, but quickly discovered that wasn't the best fit. He transferred to Southern Wesleyan University in his home state of South Carolina, and interestingly, joined the soccer team. Over the next 20 plus years, he served in numerous roles, but always within the NCCAA structure. He left athletics administration for a brief period of time to dip into private business, but he stayed involved by serving on the board. When the executive director position opened up, he agreed to serve on the search committee. Little did he know, he would be the end result of that search, and he's starting his 21st year as the executive director. Dan, welcome to Sports Connections.
Thanks, David. Great to be with you, and happy 2021.
Yeah, it's got to be better than 20, right?
Well, I think the only difference, the only thing I feel bad about is we get one less day this year than last year. We had that leap year last year, so we'll take the 365 this year and do our best with them.
That's right. Well, I posted on Facebook, like on the second or third, that it's finally true. 2020 is hindsight.
Is it?
there's my joke for the year.
That's true.
So let's start with how you got involved with the NCCAA. It's an interesting story. You and I have known each other for a couple of years, and it's a really cool story how you got involved.
Well, I won't give you the first 18 years, but I grew up in Colfax, North Carolina, a little tobacco town. Dad was a pastor, assistant principal, bivocational, et cetera. But I felt golf became my sport. I played everything all the way up through senior high school, played two or three sports a year, but golf was kind of the thing. I'll fast forward, tried to start initially walk on at North Carolina State to play golf. And when you say it wasn't my cup of tea per se, what I found was that my lack of self-discipline and a major university setting were not going to go well together. And it had nothing to do with the major university setting. It had a lot to do with my lack of real character. I had faith by osmosis, probably through parents and grandparents, but so I ended up going to Southern Wesleyan, going to hang out for a semester and transfer and play golf somewhere. Probably Guilford College at the time in Greensboro was an NAI top five program. And that's probably where I was headed. And I got to Southern Wesleyan. It was Central Wesleyan College at the time. And I ended up meeting the most impactful man in my life next to my father. And that was Dr. Keith Connor. As you said, why do you leave a school trying to play golf to now go play soccer? Well, I didn't go to play soccer. I went to state and start my grades, basically start college and then transfer. And all the cool guys on campus played soccer. They didn't have football. And I thought, well, I got to play something to be occupied. And I walked on and played soccer. They needed a backup goalkeeper. I'd not played. We didn't have it in high school where we lived. And I thought it'd be a 10-week gig, and that was it. And at the end of that season, actually, November, Coach Connor said, Dan, I think we can develop you into a goalkeeper if you'd like to stay, but that's your call. And then right before Christmas, they said, hey, if you want to play golf, we'll start a golf team next semester. Wow. And my brother was there. There were a couple of other guys. So I ended up getting 3-4 years of college golf and 4 years of college soccer. And but what happened during all of that, David, was without me knowing it, I was falling in love with Christian higher ed, and especially what can happen when a coach who is just intensely engaged in developing the souls and hearts of young men, not just their games, when that connection happens between coach and student athlete. My connection with Coach Connor was not special versus anybody else's up until probably the time I started to buy into what he was sharing. And as a freshman sophomore, I really didn't care. It was great. That's super coach. But somewhere along the sophomore junior year, what he was really trying to coach us to be, it started to take root with me. And I became a product of NCCA. We were an NCCA NAI school. And actually, my sophomore year, we were top 10 in the country NAI soccer. We were in a really good district at the time with Erskine, USC Spartanburg, et cetera. And we were very good. And come postseason, we were looking at the NAI brackets and we're not in them. And it's because coach had declared we would play NCCA because that's it. He said, we're an NCCA school. That's our mission. And then that word mission then started to take root and does to this day. And I say all that to fast. I think, David, that's where the seed got planted. The same love I started to develop there is what led Kelly and I in 1987 to say yes to going into Christian higher ed full time, leaving yuppieism and the lake of Clemson, South Carolina, and a Wendy's franchise to go live in a college dorm and be a resident director and a coach, and her a secretary at a church. And here we are, whatever, 33 years later, we're really on that same path that started with what Keith Connor developed in my heart back in 79, 80.
One of the things that I've been impressed with you and with the whole organization is you don't downplay the importance of sports in the lives of young people, but you don't look at it as the end all be all. You don't look at it as the end result. It is a tool to develop young men and women into what they will become and what they already are, but what they will continue to become in their lives. And you use sports as a vehicle to move those things forward, don't you?
Well, we like to use the phrase, to be very candid, we use intercollegiate athletics. And people say, man, that's a weird missional thing. That's what we do.
Yeah.
I can come up with something that sounds better, that looks better on a billboard or on a graphic maybe, but we use intercollegiate athletics. We didn't start intercollegiate athletics. We didn't start higher education. Without Christian higher education, we don't exist. The NCAA, NAI could take care of it all. But higher education exists and Christian higher education exists. And inside that, intercollegiate athletics exists. And we use that medium called athletics to gather young men and women, old men and women, coaches, ADs, whatever, student athletes, the young, who play really. And the level of competition is better than most would assign to it. Most would say, oh, it's intramural club. Well, it's not. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And every year in basketball, we'll have an NCCAA school beat an NCAA one school and get paid to do it on a guaranteed game. So the sport is good. But we didn't create any of that. What we do take credit for is using that to serve the great commission of Christ through a variety of things we try to put in place that, you know what, logistically are tough.
Yeah.
They're not easy to put in place. They're not easy to require. But I go back to that word I mentioned 3 minutes ago, mission.
Yeah.
Our mission is to use intercollegiate athletics to serve the great commission of Christ. The only thing in there we've created is our tools, is how we're doing it. The Great Commission was in place. Higher education was in place. Athletics were in place. We're just going to use it, and we're going to use it for that cause.
In 2000, you were part of the board that was looking to replace the longtime executive director, who, if I remember correctly, was stepping down, and you agreed to be on the search committee. You weren't looking to take over. Just tell that story.
No, not at all. And in fact, ironically, my wife, Kelly, who was not an athlete, knew nothing about athletics, married a coach and ended up in it. And so we end up in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, 5 years there at Bartlesville Wesleyan, now Oklahoma Wesleyan. I take a job as a faculty coach at Indiana Wesleyan, and she goes to work for the NCCAA of all things. The headquarters were in Marion, Indiana. The athletic director at Indiana Wesleyan helped her get the job, and she goes to work. Well, in that, she fell in love with NCCAA. Yes, athletics, I guess. But so I say all that, say we actually were moving to Greenville with the NCCAA national office for my wife's job. Most people misassume it was mine. I wasn't going to work for NCCAA. It was our favorite charity. I didn't want to go to work for NCCAA. I knew the budget. And so I say all that to say that, the executive director was leaving the end of December. The executive committee called this emergency meeting. I thought we were all going to discuss. I had candidates I was ready to bring to them. Next thing you know, they say, hey, we think you ought to consider this. I said, no. Variety of reasons. One, I didn't know if Kelly and I wanted to work together. B, I didn't know if they'd let us. And C, I don't know if that we should. My marriage was much more important than my job.
Yeah.
And hers too. But literally they said, would you pray about it? And as I've told you before, that was the first big mistake. We said, yes. And we left that emergency board meeting in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And literally it was winter, it was January, cold, bitter. Took us about maybe 10 hours to get home to Oklahoma. I'm telling you, from Fort Wayne to St. Louis, I don't know that my wife and I said a word to each other. There was just this quiet, somewhat prayer. I'd love to tell you we were that holy. It was more, I don't want to be the first one to start this can of worms. And we crossed the river and we started talking and God took it from there. And I ended up saying, yes, if they want me to serve, I'll serve. One of the keys were for me, I want Kelly to have her job. She was going to be community relations director. She was helping with that move from Indiana to South Carolina to get us into one of the keys here was a philanthropic Christian fundraising arm here. We needed to get plugged into that. And that was going to be her role per the past executive director. They said yes to that. And I'll tell you the other key thing, Dave, that I said, we have to have a members relation role. At that time, the executive director was being asked to do just too much. That role was asked to fundraise, administrate, manage, create partnerships, but also to deal with all the nuances and minutiae of, at that time, 16 national championships. It was ridiculous. And members weren't served well. Fundraising didn't get served well. He just stretched too thin. So those two key things they were willing to do, and here we are 21 years later.
See, I thought part of the stipulation for you accepting that job was to allow you to move it back to Greenville. So it was moving anyway, and you were along for the ride.
Yeah, I was actually, that was the task force I was actually part of, was the new office relocation. That started in 97. We were in Marion, Indiana. You had Taylor University, Indiana Wesleyan University, two leading Christian colleges. And all, to be candid, all the Christian higher ed money, charitable money, was already being taken by those schools in other ways. There wasn't a lot of philanthropy left for athletic entity. So we started looking 60 some cities later, we narrowed it to Fort Wayne, Birmingham, and here. Fort Wayne, we viewed finally when it was lateral. Birmingham really started to wane a little bit in their wooing and bid. Greenville was at the other end. They were bidding and wooing us a lot. And this is where we ended up. And it looked like, you would think, man, Dan and Kelly sculpted that perfectly. We didn't. I had said for years, I said, man, I love the NCAA. David would say, I'll support it as long as it's around. Because I've got to be honest, I didn't know how long it would last.
Yeah.
It was a very failed business model. And not because of anybody did anything wrong. It was just tough.
Yeah.
It was really tough to do. So we laugh about all that now.
I've heard you talk about not Greenville. Greenville is a pretty good sized community, but where you are outside, you call it Mayberry. Why is that area such a good fit for the organization?
Well, I think a couple of things for Dan and Kelly Wood. I'll do the personal first. First, we bought it. We didn't come to live in Central South Carolina. Southern Wesleyan was not where we wanted to live. That community. It's a town of 2,000, but it's really known because it's 5 miles from Death Valley at Clemson University. And that university has grown and now almost encompass Central. So all that. So that it comes with a lot of benefits, but we have one stoplight, David. Our sheriff does look like Barney Fife. I'm just being candid. and it's quiet. And to be candid, one of the things we never knew. So we're downtown Greenville with our headquarters, one of the fastest growing downtowns in America. Phenomenal change here over the last 21 years. But I go back to a husband and wife working together, and keep in mind, our number one commitment is not to each other. Our number one commitment is to the Christ of our marriage. That's first. Then it's to each of us. Well, that Christ knew that there would be days that my wife and her husband, most of the time driving separately, because she usually would leave at 2:30 or 3, because we didn't want our kids to be latchkey, and I would leave at 5:30 or whatever. That 30-minute drive between here and home has been one of the greatest blessings that we never foresaw. We're able to we kind of able to almost to get rid of the baggage if there was anything that might affect our marriage that happened at work, where Dan was the executive director and Kelly was not. But or more, regardless of role, Kelly was right and the executive director was not, which happens a lot. So it turned out to be a great gift. So part of it is the quiet. We have no streetlights where we live. I'm a stargazer. We do a lot of fire pits. That's been a real blessing for us that we didn't foresee. We bought that house because it was across the street from my older brother, his wife, and where my mom lived since my dad had passed. And it was just too good. It was not the best house. It was not the greatest location. 21 years later, we would tell you it was perfect.
Yeah.
We haven't missed any impromptu swim parties at my brother's house. We furnished a lot of homemade ice cream across the street. We have a Tuesday night gathering. Every Tuesday night, our Wood family eats together. I know families don't even want to see each other at Christmas. And that breaks my heart because we can't wait for every Tuesday night. And it's a pot of soup. It's some big pan of something, nothing fancy. But we're going to do life together, the Wood family. And that's priceless, brother. I mean, it's just really been something else for us.
That's awesome. And I've heard all those stories before, but I love hearing you tell them. First of all, I love your accent. You probably think I'm the one with the accent. Sir, you are the one with the accent. I love hearing you tell it, but that's such a great story. I want to go back to some of the things that you talked about. Talking about the NCCAA compared to the NCAA and the NAIA, how is the NCCAA different? And you've kind of alluded to this, but this is a fairly direct question. How is it different from those other two organizations?
The thing we share, first of all, everybody says, do we know our place? Because I think it's a key thing, to be honest, to know your place in the marketplace. We're the third leg of the four-year Intercollegiate Athletic Association. We understand that our dual members, about half our membership plus or minus, their primary affiliation, if they're NAI, is the NAI. If they're NCAA 2 or they're NCAA 3, that's their primary because that gives them regular season conference structure. We do not bring that. We are a postseason association, and we do have compliance. They answer that. All that's done in August, September, but we don't formulate their regular season schedules and so forth. Many of our schools do play their NCCAA regional members, and I get that, but they're not required to, and some don't because they're NAI, for example, NCAA 2 won't allow you to play more than one or two games that aren't in NCAA, Division 2. You have to play like schools. So first of all, we understand our place. We also understand that we're all doing intercollegiate athletics. NCAA is the big, we all know, that's the funded machine. That's what ESPN is aligned with. We get that. They tell the schools what to do. And the schools have to comply. They can push back, and they do at times, but rarely do the schools win. And that's not a knock. That's their model. They have created this monopoly of big-time college sports, good, bad, or indifferent. NAIA actually is older than the NCAA, and most people don't know that, but it was actually founded for those, not necessarily at the time small, but smaller.
Yeah,
then the big time, you know, they talk about corruption in college sport. Well, nothing was more corrupt than college football from 1900 to 1920, 1930. I mean, the business people that ran that, not the schools, but the business people who paid. So, you know, all that. Well, NAI came along to kind of be a cleaner version of college sports there, you know, 70 years ago, almost now. So they've been around and they fill a void. They fill a niche. So therefore, state, secular, faith, whatever, institutions, they don't have to be smaller. They tend to be. Most of them are 4,000 or less, but they fill a great void. You know, they market as student athlete friendly, but they are conference affiliated. Jim Carr and their staff has done a phenomenal job of growing that association. Even when they lost schools, it was mainly not their fault. It was schools that wanted to go chase the NCAA dot, the GSAC, the Sooner Athletic, some of those conferences. Those major NAI success stories wanted to go be successful in the next. And a lot of people chase the big blue dot. The NCAA logo doesn't say 1, 2, or 3 on it. It just says NCAA. Smart on their part. So that's the NAIA serves a great role there. They are a leader. They're gaining in their footprint and voice. It's not the NCAA. And NCAA still, they make decisions and compliance things that actually the NAIA and us have to react to, because we can't fight that if we're not in line with the NCAA. So all that to say, so when, what does that leave for us? The number one thing that differs for us, I'm not here to say we're better. I'm just telling, we are mission driven.
Yeah.
There's that word from 20 some minutes ago that Keith Connor taught us, mission. And why is that important? Everything has to go through that. Everything has to go through who we are to be. It can be a great endeavor that should be done, but it's not, if it's not in our mission wheel, it's not for us to do. I can quit my job and go do it somewhere else if I want to, but that's not our thing. Somebody else will have to pick that up. The other thing that gets misnomered, sometimes we're viewed as FCA or AIA, like a parachurch huddle. We're not. We're intercollegiate. We got 200 and some pages of compliance, and our members have to toe a line too. But they view us not as the wagger, but we're more the servant. We're here to serve them. Again, I go back to what I said. They were here before we came along. Christian higher ed was, athletics was. So we didn't invent this. We're their partner. And we are their partner in intercollegiate athletics. We're their partner in the utilization of that medium. But there's a goal, and our goal, and our members' goals, as much as sometimes it doesn't look like they're necessarily following mission, is to serve the Great Commission of Christ. They recruit for the right to pour into the light. The Keith Connors of the world are sprinkled across college athletics, NCAA, NAIA, NCCA. But I will tell you that per capita, the Keith Connors of the world that want to make better husbands and wives and fathers and mothers, not just better shooters, runners, hitters, throwers, tacklers, per capita, more of them exist in NCCA than anywhere else you'll find. That's really why a lot of them, they're much more called to what they're doing than career punching. We see those who want to use college coaching as a career and move through us quickly, but they don't last very long. And to be honest, they're typically not mission fit. Those that are find a niche here, and it's tougher. Budgets are smaller, but man, as I tell people, the rewards are out of this world. and that's really our difference, David, is we are missional and mission driven. And it's why our championships look different. Those weeks, our convention looks different. We're not there to sell, pander. It's not all minutia of compliance. We really want to pour into the lives in those 3 days of our coaches and their families if they come. We want them to know that they are the best of the best, we think. They're servant-hearted people, and we want to encourage them as they go into summer and then for us because we're a June convention.
Do you get a chance to interact with the Jim Carrs, the Mark Emmerts of the world? Do you meet with them, talk with them, and how did those conversations go? Do they appreciate what you guys are doing?
Yeah, NAI, I'll start there. They've been a great partner. Even when I was coaching, I remember those days. There's been a lot of, because we have to have that link up. For example, we have to take our NCCA postseason schedule and mesh it into an NAI and an NCAA schedule. That's tough. NAI is phenomenal. We still have our schools that might play in our championship attempt and still play, or they'll play in NAI. They may lose first round in some of the satellite and then still play with us in our national championship because the dates allow that. NCAA doesn't allow that. You get one championship run. They require you to declare that all the way back in August. So our NCAA two or three members, most of them have to declare that if they qualify for NCAA two, three, they have to go there.
Yeah,
and they do. Don't have a lot of dialogue with Mark Emmert. I mean, again, the business of the NCAA is significantly different than per se us. Some of it's similar, but on a different level. I will tell you, I was privileged to be part of a thing called Common Ground Think Tank. Very unique, funded by Nike. NCAA put it on. Two groups that people would not see coming together. It was an LGBT plus group and people of faith group in college sports. And everybody, you know, you would think that's going to be this combative, could be, and at times was, but for the most part, it was two groups of people who knew that at any one time had taken the other group as a student athlete per se, and not treated them well, not cared for them well. And the idea was, how do we make sure every student athlete, regardless of faith, gender, sexuality, identity, whatever, that they're treated well, they're cared for as a student athlete, if they're on your campus, my campus, whatever. Can everybody attend every school? No, and they're not gonna want to. Right. That's common sense. But we need to make sure that we cared first. And ironically, I think the Christian higher education side had a big burden because we had quarantined a group in our mind. It doesn't change necessarily what scripture may say, whatever, how you want to do your theology, or even what concreteness it. We're called for love. We're called to care. That leads before we ever come up with everything else.
Yeah.
And it was a great group. I love that partnership we got with NCAA, so forth. When it comes to, so a lot of our relationship there might be with Div 2 or Div 3 Management Council now, David, versus we have no Division 1 dual members. So Liberties, Gardner-Webbs, Baylor, those schools, they're not going to be members of NCAA. The competition would be incongruent. We get that. The funding's incongruent. They're not looking to be a dual member. But we do have probably five or six Div 2, NCAA 2s, and another five or six Div 3s that we are such a mission fit for them, they want to be a part. Some of them don't play very regularly. They don't declare to participate, but they want their intercollegiate athletic program to be viewed through an NCAA missional scope. And that's healthy for us. So, yeah, the partnerships are good. The gap's widening. I'm not going to deny that. NCAA was going to move with culture. NCCAA is not, because a lot of those stances go against NCCAA fundamentals. So there's going to be points where we don't get to step in line and follow. We don't think we're at the point where that creates antagonism for between the two associations, but it does cause places where we have to agree to disagree. And yet we still support one another. And NCAA wants their student athletes to be well served. And some of their members are never going to see NCAA postseason. And they like the fact that we offer that to some of their student athletes. They get that chance. And there's a benefit there.
Let's talk about some of the aspects of the NCCAA that make it different from those other organizations. First one I want to ask about is the game plan for life. Just tell us what that is and how it works.
Yeah, jokingly, I used to say that, you have to have a character model to be an intercollegiate athletic association. It's like the Rotary Club has one, Boy Scouts have one, NCAA and AI had champions of character. And NCCA really didn't have one. It could be argued that, well, we're a biblical organization, so we already had all that. Well, that's fine, but that's a big program if you're trying to follow that. And literally, I don't know any other way to put it. It was one of these. When you say you had a vision, you sound old, but I literally was in a hotel room in Dallas headed to the airport after a speaking engagement and some meetings down there. USA Today was tucked under the door of my Hilton hotel room. I grabbed it, went to the airport, checked in, had an hour to kill, started reading. I turned to it was the first section somewhere in 06, and it's a bit full page ad taken out by the parents of the Duke lacrosse team. And it was a picture that said, how about a standing ovation for an outstanding group of young men who took a stance and won, or something to that effect. And I sat there and I read it and I looked at it again and I was like, wow. And it was after everything had shuttled down, a corrupt DA had trumped up charges, lied, suppressed. We get all that. We've seen the 30 for 30 on that.
Yeah.
And I get the fact they didn't deserve to be prosecuted. But what I also got is of that time, a father of a 16-year-old and a 10-year-old, was none of what they did was going to be a role model that I was going to stand up and applaud at any time. The strippers, the parties, and what, because it was this, well, we know they do that, but everybody does that. That's college life. Well, maybe, I don't think it is. I know it exists. I get all that. But that was not what I wanted our culture to be taught. I didn't want the NCCA to be having teams stand up and applaud because you shouldn't have been prosecuted. And so it became this battle within of, so what would we want to be our character traits? there's a lot of them out there. Integrity and, you know, sportsmanship. That's a big one. Sportsmanship, integrity. A lot of people define it by do what you said you were going to do. Well, if that's the case, then a terrorist who said they're going to blow up your house and does it has integrity. I don't buy that. Sportsmanship, you know, play fair. Well, how do you do that in baseball when you're supposed to steal bases? It gets gray there. It gets tough. And so literally dialing in, the very first thing that came to me was the number one trait a biblical character model had to have was love. Mm-hmm. Has to be, because that's what Christ led with. That's what led him leaving heaven. That's what gave us Christmas. That's what gave us the cross, the empty grave, so forth. So that became our true north. And I use true north because that's what led to the whole design idea of a compass, of we have to get true north right. You have to have it pointed right. Next became integrity, but not integrity of doing what I said I'll do, or even just doing what's right when nobody's looking. It's really a core value that we use Job as our model, that a guy who never did anything wrong, lost everything. His friends came by his side and said, you did something wrong. He goes, no, life happened. That's what happened to Job. Life happened. And through it all, Job kept an integral relationship with God. And a lot of believers don't do that. When it goes bad, we bail. Next was faith. We use that. Hebrews 11, it's a hall of fame of all these great history. I am one that say that chapter's not, the Bible's not dead, first of all, but certainly that chapter's not dead. Hebrews 11 lives, and I have proof. Keith Connor would be in my Hebrews 11 if I was writing it today. My wife is in my Hebrews 11. My kids are in my Hebrews 11. They have been faith heroes and examples to me, but so are my parents and teachers and certain others. So that's faith. In other words, what are we doing that's adding to the legacy of that great cloud of witnesses that we read about? And then finally is excellence. And excellence goes at the end, and many say it should go on the front, but I disagree. They say, no, be excellent and everything else will happen. No, because excellence is the last thing we're going to be successful at. It's the hardest thing because it is a behavioral list in our human mind. We can't get over that excellence should be a trait. It's performance. I showed up on time. I did my job. I made an A. I made the shot. I stopped the goal. I made the putt. I stopped at the stoplight. And excellence is so much more. And we put it at the end. It's so proximate to love, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
But my excellence is not registered through my faith in Christ and in a relationship with him that I will not allow to waver no matter what befalls me, then I'm not ever going to get that right in the way he wanted. So that's what, for us, that became our tenet: love, integrity, faith, and excellence, biblical value system. I didn't want it to be, David, to be honest, a Boy Scout. I did not want to be about helping the old lady across the street, because you were 18 once, so was I. And I got to be honest, at 18, did I care that what I did that day made my community better? No. I should have. I wish I had. But that wasn't me. And I wasn't a horrible kid, but I didn't care that what I did. I was out for me and my next. And so if I help an old lady across the street and it makes her day better and my community better, that's great. But I'm going to turn around like Field of Dreams and be Kevin Costner. What's in it for me? And that's not a character model we wanted to be a part. What's in it for him? And what we get from our character and relationship with him is what I think then starts to define us. And it's what we're known as. And so literally having some reworking of that right now, even within our staff, we got incredible staff, and there's some, how do we utilize that and so forth, but that's a game plan for life. We found it to be marketable. Some, there are some in Christian college sports, they really don't want those four tenets. I'm just going to be honest. They said, no, we're not interested in that. Okay. I get that, but I haven't found a time yet when Christ said, no, I don't want y'all doing that either as an association. So we'll stick with that.
All right. One aspect of that, and this maybe is a little bit of helping the old lady across the street, but it's, again, it's not the driving force. Why is service to others such an integral part of the NCCAA? You, I don't know if you encourage or require every student athlete and coach to be involved in Christian service.
We encourage, they might use the word require. We're not going to tell a kid at a national championship event at the start of the week who doesn't want to participate, still going to get to play. Yeah. We're not going to sanction anybody. But number one, I go back again. We just came through the holiday, the Christmas season. Christian is our first C of our acronym. I don't get to sidestep that. People may get tired. Man, Dan, you talk about faith. Well, it's who we are. Yeah. It makes as much sense as telling folk when Dean Smith was alive not to talk about Carolina basketball. They were synonymous. Sorry, they were synonymous. So we are Christian. And because of that, Christ, there's no greater servant that ever lived.
Yeah.
And there's no greater servant coach. And my analogy, I think we've shared this before, David. I think Christ is the greatest coach that ever lived. And I have biblical proof. He had a team of 12. They were all freshmen when he called them. There were no transfers. They played for 3 years. No, he never had a senior. Never. His senior's internship was to build the church. And I think 11 of those 12 that survived did that. Guess what? The greatest coach that ever lived lost one. And I think there's times when Christian coaches and coaches of all kind need to remember that. You can't be all things to all people. These kids are making their own walk too. So Judas made his own walk. But those other 11, for some reason, who wouldn't show up at the cross, showed up after the resurrection, and they built what we have today as the church. As imperfect as the church is, they built that. I say all that to say Christ did all that. He was always in a service model, all the way up to the last moment. I mean, the guy bends the knee to wash the feet. That's what the filth of his culture did. The lowest of the servant at a house. Culture says the only job less than washing the feet at a house was actually the person who dumped out the waste, the urinal, whatever. That was the only job worse than the foot washing basin. And that's what he showed us. And that's what he showed when he turned and didn't fight back. He wouldn't even let Peter fight. So we just think that service is actually that's what every person who wants to try to have the game plan for life and play, that's what we call them servant. You're a servant athlete. That's what I'd rather call them, servant athletes than student athletes. Servant coaches. And we do think that at that ultimate time, because again, these kids are coming to compete for a title. We're going to give away a banner. There's going to be a moment of glory. We're streaming this. They're going to rush the field. They're going to get their moment in the sun. One team is. And we think that at that time, nothing should be more important that we remind them of. We hope their schools did, but maybe they didn't. Christ is still tops. Giving of yourself should always trump winning for you. Just playing for you yourself is not what life's about. Play well, play hard. But, you know, this is we do this journey together, and I like doing life with servant-hearted individuals, be those athletes, coaches, staff members, friends, whatever.
Another difference that I've seen, and I used to work for the NCAA, and I'm friends with Jim Carr. I'm friends with Rob, drawing a blank.
Miller?
Rob Miller.
Yeah.
Who helped develop the Champions of Character program. So I'm familiar with all three organizations. One of the things that I see that's different about you is your focus on the coaches, not using them just to get to the athletes, but you guys really focus on ministering to the coaches.
I mean, to me, it's they're the frontliners. You know, in this day of COVID, we're talking about first line responders Well, there's a group of people that forever have been the first liners in all higher education athletics, and that's coaches. ADs, staffers, I get that. But I'm talking about the men and women who, now, I get the fact that some of our salaries at high-level football are out of, they're ridiculous. But for the most part, at our level, our coaches aren't overpaid. Yeah. They work more than they get paid for, and they'll do that tomorrow. And they'll do it next year, so forth. But they're the key, David. Dan Wood is not – I won't speak to, especially COVID year. In a normal year, if I'm only at five or six championships at the most. Ben Bellman does most of that coverage. Brandon, Elizabeth, our streaming folk. I'll be at a select group. If I speak to 500 student athletes a year for an hour, that'll probably be about it. That coach has them for 30 hours a week. Now, you think there can be impact there, and you think that coach is going to be exhausted? That coach has three kids at home, has a wife, maybe has a wife battling cancer, maybe it's a divorce, maybe the kids are going the wrong way, maybe life's going the wrong way, and that coach is showing up, he or she. I think that's who we have to encourage. I want our student athletes to be the best of the best, but we're not going to have direct opportunity with them. But our coaches do. And I think they need to be, I think they need to be encouraged more. You know, we've had conversation, man, what if we get coaches' spouses, get her husband or his wife, let's get them a break. Let's rejuvenate them, because they're that coach's frontline bunch who are helping. And so, yeah, we want to be that. We want to be very driven to enable, encourage, educate, pray for. Our prayer network is one of our major initiatives, and it's full of coaches who are asking, hey, can you pray for this? Got one just yesterday, a young man, his wife lost their first, it was going to be their firstborn child. 6.5 months, go to the hospital, baby passed. Now, well, you and I can go, well, we share that, we'll pray about it. No, I mean, that wrecks my day. And it's wrecked every day since he shared that. Not to the point that I question God. That's not it. But I got to pray for that family. There's not going to be, I can't think of a day yet where I'm going to get to say, you know what, I'm not praying for them today. I'm sure they're better now. We owe that to our coaches. Our staff owns that. Our board owns that, David. I wish to be very candid. There was more from all of us intercollegiately pouring back into our coaches. The problem is we watch ESPN and we want them fired. They get paid too much, yada, yada. That's not it for 90% of the coaches out there in higher education, much less Christian higher ed.
I want to talk to you about one coach or one set of coaches that kind of fits the NCCAA model at the high-level Division I level. I didn't word that very well, but being in the western part of South Carolina, you've developed a relationship with several of the coaches on the football staff at Clemson. Just talk about how, I don't even know where I want to go with this, but just talk about that relationship and how you can maybe use Dabo Swinney and some of his coaches as examples to some of the coaches in the NCCAA, you know, as hey, he's paid a lot of money and he's expected to win at a very high level, but that's not his focus.
Yeah. I go back to Lee Iacocca. One of the first books I read on, I remember reading about him going over to take over Chrysler, that brand that was complete failure. And I remember, if you remember in that, I mean, that's the 80s, David, yeah. The word culture. And we hadn't heard that a lot. Now we hear business cultures left and right. Culture is to blame for everything. Culture gets all the credit for everything, whatever. But he was talking about a culture and developing a culture. And so I say that, I'll fast forward. We do life with Christian college coaches and ADs who say we just can't create Christian culture in our athletics department. So we're on a campus. We do chapel 2-3 days a week. They're required to take 6 to 9 hours of Bible curriculum. Every faculty staff is called to be missional. But we're saying in that environment, we can't help our kids create spiritual formation. And so then I look at Dabo Swinney and that staff. I don't care who beat who. I don't care that they have titles. I can promise you Trevor Lawrence is not worried one bit about awards. I'm just telling you, he's not. He didn't lose any sleep last night or last Saturday, so forth. Dabo Swinney at a state college with the biggest sport they have in a state that is football nuts.
Yeah.
You know what drives Dabo Swinney? Mission. You say, oh, Dan, you're simplifying. Ask Dabo Swinney and his staff how many times winning a national title has gone on their board at the beginning of the year. You'll never find it. It's never on there. That's never the goal. The furthest they'll dream is ACC champs. Then they let, you know why? Dabo knows that after that, it's up to a bunch of people in a room that don't know, may know a lot, may not know much about football.
Yeah.
He doesn't control it. Let's win the ACC. But you know what he's trying to do? He's trying to do what Keith Connor did in 1979. He's trying to take an idiot who couldn't have probably would never have probably played golf in the ACC. I wanted to. A lot of them want to. Who's now at Central Wesleyan College and doesn't know what he's doing there. But I want to grow that guy because someday he's going to marry Kelly. Someday Trevor's going to marry fiance. Someday Travis Etienne's going to marry. Someday Travis is going to be a dad. And Dabo's no different than John Wooden on that, David. When they ask him in the 70s, is this the greatest team you ever coached? He goes, I got no idea. Check with me in 10 years. Reporter had no idea what he meant. Completely oblivious. Wooden said, let me educate you. Let me see what kind of husbands, fathers, community members, givers, and servants they are. And then I'll tell you whether the, he said, all I can tell you now is we outscore people. That's the only thing I know for certain. Dabo Swinney has worked with his job on the line. People don't know the story if they don't pay attention. Liberal groups have come in and tried to get him fired. I mean, literally. And sometimes on legal grounds. He's too faith-based. And Dabo has said, if I need to go, I'll go. His greatest line ever, I'm not that valuable to you as a football coach, but I am that valuable to this institution as a shaper of men. Weigh that one.
Yeah.
Weigh that one. And so, yes, I look at what he's done there. Listen, Clemson football players make stupid decisions. He still has 18 to 22-year-old men. So this idea, well, no, they're Christian. They have to be perfect. You know, isn't it funny that one Christian was perfect and he wasn't even a Christian? He's the guy we're named for.
Right.
We're not perfect. It's why he came. So Dabo's not seeking perfection. But he wants that kid tomorrow to be better than they were today. And it doesn't matter if the guy goes in the transfer portal or plays five. You know, Skalski's coming back. The linebacker who his greatest MO is he gets tossed from playoff games. For targeting. He's coming back. You know, I don't know. I'd love for your listeners, if they think, Dan, man, your Christianity is too much, man. My apologies, but really not. Go look at what DJ, last name we none of us can pronounce except for Dabo and Brandon Streeter, the next year's star quarterback.
Yeah.
Go look at his signing day and what he said. The first thing, why did you pick Clemson over USC and Oregon? I'm not even going to tell your listeners what they said. If they don't want to go look for it, don't let them hear it. It's rather amazing what turned the five-star number one player to come across country. It's also why his dad, when they said that they should have taken Travis out of the ACC game and the playoff game again, take him out. Let the young kid play. Guess who responded to Twitter? David, DJ's dad, saying, no, my son's right where he belongs. Trevor's earned this right. The coaches know what they're doing. We trust the process. With all the other stuff I got to read on sports page today, yeah, I'll pull for Dabo Swinney and he can be coaching tiddlywinks at, you know, MIT someday. I don't care. I love the way he goes about doing what he does. And you know what's going to happen? My guess is Dabo's going to fail someday. I mean, in that big spotlight or Kathleen. I have no idea. I'm sure they already have, that they're human. But man, the way his humility, I guarantee you, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
He understands where his role is, where his servant heart comes from. And I think you have to respect someone who went against the grain, because you can't win if you create that culture, right? Wouldn't we have said that 10 years ago? Yeah. You can't be faith-based in college football and win. You can win. Well, I don't know what came first, but I know who he serves first.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I do think it can be an example. I hope it's an encouragement to our coaches. You know, our coaches talk about the intensity. Well, watch Brent Venables. You know, pullback coach goes to our church, dude. The reason that guy is so strong is, if you've seen Venables,
yeah,
and he's jerking that guy back 200 times a game. I love that, the way they compete. And yet I love the way they love and pour on their families, their people, their community. Big fan. And I do think it's a poster program, not for perfection, but for, so we can do that. We can make that effort and be successful at it. And I'd love someday to get a list of all the fights and battles that they've had to go through, not to win games,
right?
Not to be a top four program, but to still have this culture. How many conversations, how many emails from, you know, Clemson has a huge liberal faculty contingent, just like most state schools. They have conservative, they're a liberal art school. They should have all of those viewpoints. I know for a fact they get blasted with faculty who don't like their faith culture in football. What all is he having to fight to keep doing that? But they're doing it. And I love that. I applaud that.
Well, I appreciate your time. It's a great way to wrap this up. I know we've had numerous conversations. I know you're a huge sports fan, and I know it's, I don't want to say dream job, but it is so cool that you get to work in the field of intercollegiate athletics, but with a different purpose. And I appreciate your time, and I've enjoyed this very much.
David King, thank you enough. I got to drop in on some of the initial podcast. I had no idea the bracketology history that I got in listening to Joe, so that was good. I hate seeing that Christian Okoye's alma mater now has shut down football, of all things.
But
I wish you the best. Appreciate the partnership, and love you very much. Prayers are with you.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smale. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smale and his work by visiting davidsmalebooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.